go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 51 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Let me put this jersey back on and explain who this is. This is episode 51. This is my favorite baseball player of all time, Bernie Williams. That is the number he wore, 51, for the best team of all time, New York Yankees, 1998, the dynasty of the late 90s. Let's just get into it. I've always had a thing that has frustrated me about the Yankees. If you're a baseball fan, I'm sure you've heard of the Core Four, which is the Hall of Famers, Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter. And then we have Andy Pettit, the pitcher, and Jorge Posada. Let's get into Jorge Posada. He should not be in the Core Four. Reason why I say that is because he was not on the 1996 playoff roster, their first championship. He was a part-time player and not a starter for the 1998 and the 1999 championship seasons. He did not become a full-time starter until the year 2000 against the New York Mets in the World Series. So he technically has four rings, but it should really be two rings. And Bernie Williams, my favorite player, he has four rings, but he was the best offensive player for the Yankees throughout those four championships in the late 90s and including 2000. He batted cleanup, so that's fourth, and that was the money spot at that time in baseball. You put your best hitter in the three or the four spot at that time. Today, I believe it's usually the second spot. But back then, it was cleanup, and he played center field and was a switch-handed hitter. And he was just money in the playoffs. So many home runs, so many big hits. He was a little sloppy on the base paths. I'll give you that. Sometimes he would lose his mind and not really know where he was on the base paths. But him chasing after a ball in the outfield when he was in his prime, it was one of my favorite things to watch in all of sports, the way he would glide and glisten on the outfield at Yankee, at the old Cathedral Yankee Stadium. I get the tingles just thinking about it. But that's always bothered me, and I'm not the only one. If you're a Yankee fan old enough to remember that era, a lot of us will say that Bernie Williams, they'll say that, oh, he's an honorary fifth member of the Core Four, but I think Jorge Posada should be removed, and Bernie Williams should be put into that. Ugh. Every summer, I go on the Baseball Reference page, one of the greatest websites of all time, and I start looking. I'll waste entire weekends just looking up everyone's stats and think, well, who should be in the Hall of Fame and who shouldn't, and this. Couple weeks ago during the All-Star break, I was looking at Aaron Judge's stats because I was wondering, well, is he Hall of Fame? Like, where is he at? And when I checked, if he stays healthy, Aaron Judge should have, who's the center fielder, right fielder for the New York Yankees, he should get to 300 home runs by the end of this season, and he's aged 32 or 33. So usually if you get the 500 home runs without any PED usage, and I'm not saying he is or he isn't, that's like a full proof you're in the Hall of Fame. I'm not really sure if that's true now because of the crazy offensive stats, but that would mean with 300 home runs, he would need about like four more really close to MVP type seasons, top 10 MVP votes to probably be a sure thing, first ballot Hall of Famer at age 33. It's in question. If he keeps going the way he's going, definitely, but we've seen players fall off. So it'll be interesting to see the next few years. I also think that Albert Bell should be a Hall of Famer. I know the media hates him, so he'll never get in. Are there any, who else was I looking at? Mike Trout's an interesting one. His first 10 years might be the best 10 years baseball stretch almost any player's had. All right, you know what? I'm not going to talk about baseball. I'm not going to geek out. None of you are looking up baseball stats. Let's move on. Bernie Williams, episode 51. Boom, boom. Movies. If I ever got into a movie, and it's never been a thing I've aspired to do. Now that I have done some skits for Verbal Graffiti, the thought of directing a movie is appealing to me, but to be an actual actor in it has never been a thing of mine, because I do respect acting and I do believe it's a talent. I don't think I could be like a Leonardo DiCaprio. What I'm getting at here is, though, I would want to be in a fun movie. And when I say that, I mean I want to be in a movie where the crew and the actors and actresses were having fun when we're not filming. Well, when we're filming and when we're also not filming, when we're just kicking it around the trailers. I say this because I've had that song from, what's that movie? Project X. If you've ever seen it, it's a high school party that kind of gets out of control. And it's crazy, kegs, the cars going into pools, house gets torn apart, classic coming of age, party, college movie, actually, but this was high school. And I had that song from the trailer in my head. It's been stuck in my head for a week. And I've been thinking a lot about that movie and how much fun the actors must have had and the crew and the guy holding the boomstick. That must have been such a fun month or two or however long it took to make that film. It just must have been just a party every single day. And to be in your late teens to mid-20s filming it, that must have been a blast. That is the type of movie to be, man, I want to get cast for. And I also think in the opposite, I love the movie The Joker, one of my favorite movies of all time. That does not seem like it'd be a fun movie to be on a set for, because a lot of it's in the city and it's very quick and go and dreary and it's very moody, and there's dialogue, but it's not a lot of dialogue, and the dialogue's kind of serious. So a movie like that, I would not want to be in it. The movie Fury, like all those war movies, there was a movie Fury with Brad Pitt and that guy's actor, I can never pronounce his name, Shia LaBeouf. It's basically, the movie takes place, I believe, World War II, and they're in a tank. And basically, the whole movie, they're stuck in this tank, and they get surrounded. And just filming inside a fake tank for a month with three other actors, my OCD, my misophonia, no, you could pay me $5 million. I do it for $5 million, but I would be very upset every single day on set while we were filming. That seems like those actors must have been miserable inside that tank while filming that. So, yeah, I want to be in a movie like Project X. Obviously, if you look this set, I mean, you can tell I'd rather be more fun than doing something serious like, I don't know, can we call the Joker serious or any like World War II? All along the Western Front, the latest version that got some award buzz for the Oscars last year or 2 years ago, having to crawl around in the dirt and actually know how to be a soldier. No, thank you. We'll stay in our heat controlled studio here at Verbal Graffiti. Okay, let's get into a Reddit post I found. Remember, Bernie Williams, best Yankee from the late 90s, other than Mariano Rivera, obviously. I found this one on a subreddit, Wedding Planning. We know something about planning here. Devastated and need reassurance. Hold on, my mic is on. I'm on a bachelorette trip in Key West with my mom, sister, mother-in-law, sister-in-law, and best friend. Okay. Last night we went out after a drag show, and this morning I'm horribly hungover and my beautiful ring is missing. Neither of the two bars found it, and it's not in the Uber. This ring was my fiance's great aunt's. She never had children of her own, and she left it to him. I loved it so much. Did you? And took such great care of it. I wasn't even blackout drunk or anything. I keep crying and I feel bad because everyone is just looking at me and trying to make the most of this trip, but we have a whole nother day. Can someone just tell me I'm not the worst person in the world? Or give me some feel-good stories? I just want to go home to my fiancé and cry. I'm not sure you want to go home to your fiancé right now. No. The B-Man, I am not going to give you any assurance, so please don't tell your bear ring finger to wait for assurance for me, because there will be none given. Are you the worst fiancé in the world? The worst partner? No, I can't claim that you are. You are not Amber Heard. You have not a shit on your fiancé's pillow, as far as we know. You never know. Your fiancé is furious with you. Now, your fiancé will not tell you that. I'm sure you called your fiancé to give him the heads up that, hey, you lost your golden ticket. Golden ticket being a free engagement ring. He's going to console you because that's what he has to do as your soon-to-be husband. But do know, as soon as he gets off the phone with you, he's calling his best friend, whoever that may be, and his first words out of his mind are going to be, you are not going to believe what my fucking fiance did. She lost that fucking ring I gave her. And he's gonna rant for a half hour with his best man over how such a dumb you are. Like, how do you lose a ring? How do you lose a ring? When you get engaged, as the wife, as the bride, you have two responsibilities. One, first responsibility is to keep your weight. Keep your weight or lose a few pounds so that when you do get your wedding dress back after the first fitting, the dress fits on you. That's the first objective. The second responsibility is not lose the engagement ring that your fiance gave you. And you lost it on a fucking drag show in Key West. This is not like you're in Burning Man in the desert somewhere. This is a very tame party, a bachelorette party that you're at. Shame. Shame on you for this. I sincerely hope you have thick skin, because if you were my fiance and you were part of the Glass family, we'd be bringing this up and making fun of you every single holiday, every gathering we had, every chance we got. Every Christmas we'd go, hey, remember when you lost our family heirloom less than a month after Brian gave it to you? Like, I wouldn't call off the wedding if I were your husband to be, but I would be making fun of you so much for your stupidity, for losing my ring, that I would make fun of you so much. I would force you into calling off the wedding. That's how relentless I would be with my jokes and putting you down because of it. You fucked up. You lost the ring. You lost it at a drag show. You can't trust those cross-dressing magicians. I'm sure it was one of them that stole it from you. My big takeaway, though, as your I'm putting myself in your fiance shoes. As your soon-to-be husband, your fiance, losing the ring is not the biggest concern I have. My biggest concern is who you had the bachelorette party with. Let's go through the list again. So the people at your bachelorette party are your mom, your mother-in-law, your sister-in-law, and your best friend. None of them wanted to be at your bachelorette party. They were all there because of obligation. You have no friends. It was all family and then your best friend. And I'm going to break it to you. She's not your best friend. She's the only reason why she continues to be friends with you all these years is because she knows you have no other friends, and she's not woman enough to break off the friendship because you're a wet blanket. Nobody wants to be with you other than your fiance. And if I'm your fiance, that's the red flag I have. That's what I'm questioning more so than the ring. Because your husband has to ask himself, why am I engaged to this babe who doesn't have any friends? Why does nobody else want to spend time with her? That's what he needs to ask himself. The answer is probably because what you like to do for fun is go to a drag show and get drunk with your in-laws. There's something about you that's you're not giving off good vibes. If I was your fiance, that's why I'd leave you, because you have no friends. It's not anything to do with the ring, because the ring, it's really not that big of a deal. It's a golden ticket. The ring he got from his great aunt. Nobody knows who their great aunt is. I don't know who my great aunt is. I could almost guarantee you don't know who your great aunt is. And if you do, you don't love her. You probably have a better relationship with the Amazon truck driver that comes to your house four times a week than you do all your extended family. The money, that's what bothers your husband to be. Because that was a golden ticket. That was a Willy Wonka. He opened up the chocolate. He got the free ring. How much do engagement rings cost? What, $5,000? He's out $5,000. If I was your fiance, I'd rather you cheat on me with a stripper and you and your crew of family and fake friends swear secrecy than lose your ring. I'd rather that than find out 10 years later when one of those wenches drinks too much red wine and spills the beans that you cheated on your bachelorette party. Because I can meld my pride back together. I can't get that ring back. And fuck the ring. I can't. Now I need to buy you a ring, which means I'm out $5,000 and I'm never going to have that $5,000 back again. So, honey, like, don't be upset when I replace your engagement ring that you lost with a fake, what do they call it? The fake diamond. I give you, what's it called? Zirconia, whatever that is, that fake diamond, and I give you a bucket of super glue so you keep it on your finger forever. Have a fake smile on your face when I give you that as a replacement. You better not frown when I give you that fake diamond. I'm slurring a lot of my words this episode. This is just bad omens. This wedding, your marriage will last, because your husband's probably a simp. He probably can't find anyone else, and that's why he chose a babe who has no real friends and loses an engagement ring at a bachelorette party that's not even a full rager. He has no better option, so he's stuck with you. So you got that going for you. So, hey, be better next time. If you have a second marriage, use some duct tape. Let's go see some photos. I'm thinking about eating a pint of chocolate ice cream and wanking myself off after. All glory to hedonism. But that's for after. Right now, we're still in episode 51, a segment 2. And in this segment, I'm going to attempt to instill some vocabulary words that I've written down this week. The B-Man, I am a malleable person. I wear this jersey 51 to pay homage to my favorite baseball player of all time, Bernie Williams, which I mentioned in the first segment. You should know that I don't like wearing jerseys up until recently. I've never owned one. I bought this jersey this year. Wearing a jersey of a guy with a jersey with a name on it, of a guy who's younger than you, who's more attractive than you, he's more athletic, he's wealthier, his wife is hotter, he could jump higher, he's more well-known. Wearing that jersey out in public, to me, that makes you beta, it's cuck behavior, it makes you a simp, you're a soy boy, you're a spineless jellyfish. But I was having a conversation with a comedian friend of mine after a show this past winter, and he's a guy who wears a lot of sports jerseys. And I was telling him, hey, you're a soy boy for wearing jerseys. And he made a salient case for wearing sports jerseys. And his reasoning was, well, when I wear a sports jersey, it's a great conversation starter. Because oftentimes I'll be wearing it out and someone will come up to me and be like, hey, I love that player. In this case, let's say it's Bernie Williams. We start talking sports and then I start talking to his friends. And every time I've worn a jersey out, I've made new friends or I've talked to new people that night. And I gave it a lot of thought. And I was like, damn, he beat me. He defeated me in mind-to-mind combat. So now I submit to him, and now I am a jersey wearer, and I do not criticize anybody who wears a jersey, especially if it's a throwback, like one of those cool, like sky blue Philadelphia Phillies jerseys or a throwback. Who has a great, the Angels with the halo, those are great throwbacks. I'm a big fan of throwback jerseys. Or the Buccaneers with the creamsicle orange. All right, enough with the jerseys. Let's keep it going. See if I could use a few more vocab words. Found this. I looked up this thing on the subreddit for Las Vegas. Man tried to sell me a bracelet. Tell me all about it. Not sure if this is a scam or someone trying to feed their addiction. But when I was playing a slot at Excalibur last time, a man came up to me and showed me a bracelet. I knew right away that he was trying to sell it, but it got me thinking. Could it be a scam? What if he's asking for $100, but it turns out to be a cheap Walmart trinket that cost him $5? I mean, unless you're an expert of jewelry, it's hard to tell how authentic any piece of jewelry is just by looking at it. Or it could just be a guy pawning off his goods. Either way, I know this has happened before and plenty of times, but has anyone had any other experience with these pawners? Could they be trying to scam you? Edit. I'm no jewelry expert, so please don't judge me if I can't tell the difference between a real bracelet made from real silver or a good to cheap Walmart plastic one. Well, to that I say, once you post on Reddit, you can't tell us not to judge you, because that's what we're going to do. We're all judging you. Of course, this is a scam. It's a scam 100 out of 100 times. Personally, I'd be surprised if this cost $5 to make. It probably cost 2 pesos to make. He would make profit with that. Anybody who comes up to you trying to sell you something, that's a scam. That's a scam right away. As soon as this guy came up to you, first of all, don't play slots. That's a sucker's bet. Play some card games. Play some video poker. Play some baccarat. What's the one where it goes around? I'm not a big gambler. Whatever one goes, don't be playing slots. That's soy boy material. Don't be doing that. But anyways, so you're at the slot machine. The guy comes up to you trying to sell you a bracelet. What you should have done right away is feel for your wallet and your phone. Because I'm guessing the scam was not to sell a necklace to you. The scam was to distract you. So the scam was a distractor. What he was probably going to do was try to engage you, like I'm trying to do here. So he comes up to you and goes, hey, I got this bracelet. What do you think? And then he gives you some kind of sob story. He tells you, yeah, this bracelet was made in Malaysia by kids on the coastline. They go to school, then they go to the beach afterwards where they handcraft all these bracelets. And then we send them to these monks on top of a hill who haven't spoken for 3 years to better understand the sound of a whisper, a knight's tale, if you know, you know. And then he's telling you the story and he's moving his hands and he's making eye contact with you. And as he's doing all that, yada, 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 here comes the onside kick hands team to pull away your phone, your wallet, your wedding ring, ripping the chain off you, whatever you have, they clear you dry. And then when they leave, even if you haven't bought the cheap bracelet that costs 2 pesos, you don't know. You're out of everything because they've taken everything. So next time this happens, and it will happen, if you're in any major metropolitan area, have your hand on your keys and your phones and your wallet at all times if strangers come up to you. Because this is what might happen. Let's say, in this case, the worst didn't happen, but what could have happened? So I'm telling you what could happen going forward. So the guy comes up to you, the weirdo, trying to pawn off some cheap trinket, bracelet. You say no, you leave. You lose $400 playing slots. So you figure, well, I'm going to wallow in my misery. I'm going to buy an escort. So you find an escort and you find a deal. And you go, okay, you agree on $800, and you open up, you go to your phone to Venmo her the $800, and you realize your phone ain't there. And then you're like, damn, that guy got me, and he's gone. You're never going to see him again. And then on top of the embarrassment of having to get an escort is having to tell her, oh, I already got scammed by another sucker, so you can't suck my dick. My bad. But really, of all the scams, I mean, that's not the worst scam that could happen to you, is someone trying to sell you a bracelet or have the hands team come and pickpocket you while the sale is going down. You know, come on. This is Vegas. There are plenty of guys who have bought a hooker only to find out she had a wiener in her pants. That might be the worst scam of all in Vegas. You know, Elvis ain't Elvis, and the Marilyn Monroe ain't Marilyn Monroe in Las Vegas. You should know that going in. So be better next time. So I hope you didn't get anything stolen. I also want to say, I don't judge you for not knowing jewelry. Myself, I'm not a big jewelry guy. This is the only piece of jewelry I own. I'm pretty much a failure with all the babes, so I've never dated anyone for an elongated period of time. So I've never gotten to a point where I bought jewelry for any babe. A few years ago, though, my mom asked me to buy her a necklace for Christmas. I know nothing about jewelry, silver, gold, anything. She said, hey, don't spend a lot of money on it. So what I did is I went to Bryant Park, New York City, around Christmas time. They have a bunch of like Christmas shops up around an ice rink. A lot of them sell jewelry, handmade jewelry. So I went into stores, and they were all super expensive. Like, I would hold up this brace or this necklace, it'd be like $75 or like $250, and I couldn't decipher, well, what makes this $200 and what makes this $75? So I put them all back, and I went down to Union Square, New York. Same thing, a bunch of like outdoor, like Christmas season shopping center. Same thing. Looked at all this jewelry. It seemed wildly overpriced to me. And all this, the people at the stands were, oh yeah, handcrafted. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about handcrafted. I'm looking for something that looks decent for $50. And I could honestly, I walked away from that experience not knowing anything. I was more frustrated about jewelry than I was going in. I didn't know I could be frustrated about jewelry. After that experience, I'm not buying jewelry for anybody. I think I ended up buying my mother a sweater or some. I actually think I bought her an apron, which everyone in my family made fun of me for buying my mom an apron. Like, yeah, cook for me, mom. But she needed one. She asked for one. To be man, I was giving her what she asked for. I was giving the people what they need. Yeah, Vegas, man, it's nasty. Vegas is nasty. You go to any metropolitan area, especially a touristy area, like a tourist trap area like that, Las Vegas, you got to have your hands on your pockets at all times. Front pockets, be like a running back, high and tight. Get one of those like fanny packs that you could put like a lock on and hold it over your waist and just high and tight. Shoulders forward, high and tight. Get through the crowd. Don't engage anybody. Don't allow anybody to engage you. And anytime anybody comes up to you, you tell them, go suck a fat one.